everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Jeanette Wilson, and I'm very excited to welcome Tina Gears, who is an educator and the brains behind Inspired Minds Early Childhood Coaching and Consulting, to the ECCDC podcast. Join us as we have a conversation on play, how does learning happen, and home childcare. Regardless of the type of setting you practice in as an educator, there's something in this podcast for you. Welcome, Tina. It's wonderful to have you on the ECCDC podcast and to be reconnecting with you.
Hi, Jeanette. Thanks for inviting me. This is really exciting. I know we've collaborated on a couple other projects, so this is neat that we can do this, can spend this time together and chat and have some conversation.
Yeah, great. Lovely. Well, thank you for sharing your time with us this afternoon. So to start our conversation off this afternoon, can you please share a little bit about yourself with our listeners and your connection to the early learning and child care community?
Sure. Well, I've been an early childhood educator for about 23 years now. I started the profession actually in Taiwan. I lived in Taiwan for 7 years, and I was supposed to be teaching at the university a business English class. I was ready for that. And I got to Taiwan, went immediately within an hour to the university. I did a session, did a class with them. And then they said, okay, we're going to take you to your school now. And 2 hours later, I was inside a toddler room with 24 toddlers, sitting in a circle in little wooden chairs, and I was absolutely lost. I had absolutely no clue what I was going to do. I had to recall things that my mom would do with us growing up, and I was really out of my realm. But within a few months, I was hooked, and I actually left the university and went full time into working and caring for young children. Got my degree in teaching while I was over there and worked in grade three and still worked in the early child care sector over in Taiwan. And then I decided to go to England for a little bit and worked a little bit in England over the summer just as a part-time casual educator, then came to Canada. And I've been here for, I think 16 years now, something like that. And I've worked all across Canada from Ontario, the GTA area, out to BC. And I got my diploma in early learning and childcare. And I'm actually, as of July, I will be finished my degree from Ontario Tech University in early childhood studies. So looking forward to that. And now my journey has gone from being an educator to actually now a play advocate, and really honing in on play pedagogy, how that works within the context of what we do as early childhood educators, and supporting other educators on their own individual professional learning journey. I think it's really important that we feel supported and valued and connected as a sector. And so that's where my passion currently is supporting other educators across Canada.
Yeah, great. Wow, quite an interesting route that you came.
So yeah.
Early learning in childcare being quite different from business and English.
Yes.
So yeah, quite an interesting route. I know lots of people, I came from a very traditional route. I knew from, as a teenager that I did want to work with children. I'm a nursery nurse, is the term that they used to use in the UK. But my journey is I went towards play work, so more of that play approach. So I'm going to say congratulations on your degree in advance of you finishing.
Very excited about that. Yeah, it's been very eye-opening, I must say, because they're taking a lot of like the inquiry-based approach that we do in childcare. And they're taking unlearning and co-construction and all the theorists that we know. And they're like, look, we can put these amazing theories and practices into the education system. I'm like, we've been doing that for quite a long time in early learning and childcare. So it was really ironic for me to hear that this is new and novel when it's something that we've never been recognized as our approach in the early learning sector. So it was very interesting to see that a lot of familiar practices, but a lot of differences at the same time in how to connect things and how to support educators in their journey, especially when Educators come from a more educational, academic background and approach to childcare, and how to help them kind of weave in humanistic approach and human ecology, as well as, those co-construction models of child-led initiatives in the child early learning sector to achieve those academic outcomes when they're ready for it, like not right now, but later.
And you spoke to that co-learning, co-constructing approach, and how does learning happen? Our early learning framework in
Yes.
Ontario speaks very much to that co,
Absolutely, it
yeah, that
does.
co-learning approach. I'm a real, I love all the theory. I love all the theorist bit. I love kind of connecting those to our work that we're doing. And you mentioned earlier about, educators feeling supported and valued and those connections, because in our profession, it hasn't always been seen as, a real job, a profession, seen as babysitters. And over the last decade or so that we've been trying to challenge those views and misconceptions.
And it starts with us valuing our own profession, valuing our worth, and seeing us and each other as professionals and uniting together to give that collective voice to our profession. And that's really important, no matter what the background you come from. Maybe your prior knowledge or experiences, we really are all here, not just because we like children, but because we see the strengths of children, we see their successes, and we really want them to flourish. We don't want them just to get by. We want to see these amazing, capable individuals really shine. And I think that's what really helps us bringing in all those theories and the neuroscience. That's my geeky part, is the neuroscience and psychology of it. I love that stuff. But bringing that all into our practices, not so we can talk to the children like that, but so we can explain what we do with the children and how caring is so important and how care practices. I mean, Carol Garboden has an amazing book on that. On illuminating care, but it's really been always seen traditionally as a side effect or women's work, and that's what we do naturally. But it is actually part of our profession, is providing that foundational environment, those foundational relationships that children need in order to flourish.
Yeah, great. Yes, Illuminating Care, an absolutely wonderful book that's doing, a lot for our care pedagogy. And I know very much there was kind of a move to just early learning, that child care piece getting dropped. But I'm quite passionate about the word early learning and child care. That's just me personally, that we're not losing that.
Me too. I'm with you on that one,
That
Jeanette.
care element is so important. And you spoke to that collective voice. And I know for our listeners in Ontario, we do have the College of Early Childhood Educators as well, that have done a lot to raise the profession up.
And that's what we need. We need everyone coming together to form that voice, right? And really advocate not only for children and families and community, but for ourselves as well. So when we say, oh, when someone asks us, what do you do for a living? I say, I'm an early childhood educator. And they go, oh, that's amazing. I can't believe you're doing that. That's such hard work. I'm so happy. Thank you so much. Not this, oh, so you babysit, right? So changing that societal mindset, changing some systemic barriers that we're facing, but we have to do that together.
Definitely, definitely. So much happening in the sector, so many positive things happening across Ontario and across Canada as well. So you speak to yourself as being a play protector. You touched on play just earlier when you were sharing about yourself, but I've also seen that you refer to yourself as a play protector. So I'm curious to what a play protector is and why you feel that play needs protecting.
So, in the last few years, I went to the World Forum on Childcare and Education in Vancouver a few years ago. And I've always had a very playful disposition. That's part of who I am. Growing up, I had a lot of positive play experiences, and that's just been a regular part of my my upbringing and my practices as an educator. It's very, very playful. But when I went to the World Forum event, which is a world organization that gathers researchers, policymakers, teachers, educators, organizational CEOs, every single position within our sector, we all come together and we advocate for quality, we advocate for children. And I'm actually one of the co-leads of the World Forum Play Working Group. So, as a protector of play, it's not just about, implementing play pedagogy or play-based practices. It's really seeing the spectrum and continuum of play, recognizing, as Jak Panskov says, that it's a biological drive, it's a primal emotion of human beings. We have, as human beings, one of the longest childhoods out of all mammals. And so that's that playfulness, which is why we're so intelligent. And recognizing that rudimentary and foundational biological need for human beings to play, especially in the early years, where we are seeing over the past few decades, play is being removed. And what happens when you remove play is you remove dopamine. You increase your cortisol, your stress hormone. And so we can't optimize our learning if we're constantly in a state of stress. If we're removing one of our essential primary drivers, and how are we supposed to optimize our learning? How are we supposed to adapt to an ever-changing world if we're taking a core component of who we are out? So, as a protector of play, this is what I showcase for educators, for teachers, for community members, policymakers. I bring that research. I bring the passion. Also, the rights of the child, UNCRC Article 31 about the rights of the child. It's definitely about knowing how to advocate that, how to bring that into your practices as an educator, and really putting that at the center of our focus. And I just graduated from Suzanne Axelson's first cohort of being a Playadista. So I am a level one certified Playadista. I'm so excited about that. And that was probably the deepest, most meaningful course, 1 year course I have ever taken in my practice as an educator. And it really did spearhead that this is the direction I want to go. I want to protect children's play because it's so foundational and so crucial to everything they are, everything they do, that when I don't want to see it being dwindled away and just a mythical thing we talked about before, back in the days when we played. I want to say, oh, what did you do today for play? And using that to support children's growth and development, well-being, and really seeing that as part of that holistic lens that we take as early childhood educators. I get so passionate about this. If I go on to a rant, just interrupt me because this is really, after 23 years, I know this is where I am meant to be, is being this protector of play.
Yeah, I know. I'm an early years professional, but I'm also a play worker. That comes from my background of working in the UK. So I totally hear you on when you're saying about play, that we need to be advancing play. So much play is getting squeezed, recess is getting squeezed.
Squeezed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In often in society, those things about not wanting children to, play out, no ball games, those type of things. So that's just amazing the work that you are doing and getting that message over. And yes, Suzanne, I've not done her course, but she has some great blogs. So if our listeners aren't aware, what maybe we'll pop that link, Suzanne's link. Into I forget what her blog is called, but we'll pop the link in the notes.
Yeah. And she has a great book called The Original Learning Approach. And that's what her Playadista course is based on, is this interwoven, complex pattern of children's upbringing and how it's all about seeing that relationship, seeing the play within the components of children's upbringing. It was honestly transformational. And there was so many amazing educators from around the world that were in this course. And that just really helped me say, yeah, this is where I want to go. And we're seeing so much of it being removed. A lot of times we'll say, oh, children have changed in the last 10 years. No, they aren't, haven't. The environment's changed.
Yeah.
The environment, what we've done to children as the adults who are around them and supporting them, that's changed. But children, human beings don't change in 10 years. It takes, generations to evolve and change. And so we're really looking at giving children the environment they need. There's a reason why it's called the third teacher, is because when we create that responsive environment and we honor the work of the child, and we really see their core needs, and we are responsive to that, then that's when we can see those behaviors that everyone's talking about that will decrease. They'll never be eliminated because that's part of their learning process, but we'll see children feeling more mighty learners. They will feel more confident and capable in their own abilities and in their own identity. And they'll feel that sense of belonging because we, the amazing educators around them, have given them the environment and that accepts that brave and safe space.
Yeah, and the important role that everybody who works with children and young people have in that protecting play piece there. So you mentioned the World Forum Working Group. I believe that you're also a member of the International Play Association for Canada and the Canada Child Care Federation. Just wondering if you could share a little bit. You spoke to the World Forum. Maybe you could share a little bit with us about IPA and the CCCF.
So the first organization I joined was actually the CCCF. I'm based here in Alberta right now, and so I joined our provincial organization on early for early childhood educators. And then I also joined the Canadian Child Care Federation, and I did it for two reasons actually, because the CCCF provides a really strong framework for educators, a resource, a hub for us to go to access research, access handouts, share information with family members. So it's a great hub for learning for early childhood educators. And that's why I originally joined that. I want to be part of the bigger picture. And I feel the more educators that join provincial organizations, national organizations, world organizations, the stronger our voices will be.
Yeah.
Right? That we're not stuck in our own little circle. We're actually recognizing the ripple effect of what our profession has, not only in the children and families we work with, but our community, our society, the economics, the future, everything. It's that ripple effect. So we have to be a part of organizations that really resonate with us. So I started with the CCCF. I learned about IPA, International Pele Association, actually at the World Forum. So I joined that. And again, they are another voice specifically for play, and they are around the world. So the US has one, Scotland has one, Canada has one. And we're slowly trying to build that awareness of play. We have also Rights to Play Canada, which works primarily with Indigenous communities and advocating for the rights of marginalized communities and refugees. And so all of these are different perspectives of how play impacts children's well-being, development, and development. So that's why I feel I want to have different voices that I'm hearing from, that I'm learning from, in order to share that with the educators, because a lot of educators might not know about these associations. And honestly, it's about hearing also from one of our own, and not just from researchers and not just from policymakers, but from someone who's been frontline with the children, who's had many different hats, and knowing that we have the same voice and the same strength in our voice as policymakers, as researchers, as these idols that we look up to. So when I went Suzanne, I was a little bit intimidated and excited, just like Sally, Peter Gray, like all these idols that I have. They're real people. But I find sometimes educators, we get a little intimidated by that. And so sharing these voices from educator to educator just gives us that comfort zone.
Peter Gray, I love his work. We can also pop a link into the notes too. He has a great blog, great information, and linking back into the IPA. So when The IPA was in Calgary in Canada. He was one of the keynote speakers for the IPA when it came to Canada, which is great. And at the ECCDC, myself and my colleague, we were lucky enough to be able to share our outdoor play research at the IPA in Calgary.
That's fabulous. Yeah, I'm hoping to get Peter Gray to come out too. I'm a founder of a nonprofit play organization, and we're hoping to get him to come out to one of our conferences to present because he's kind of one of the original founders of free play and that advocate and that voice that was made really, really public.
And he's really even though he's an academic, he is what's the expression I'm looking for? He's really easy to listen to, is really great information that he shares, really relatable, I guess, is the phrase that I'm kind of looking
Yeah,
for
he's
there.
really down to earth and he's not using terminology that we're all going, pardon me. Right? It's really things that we can understand. And I think his passion for it also comes through.
Great, thanks. So just wanted to shift gears a little bit.
Let's shift. Let's do it.
So you facilitated some webinars for the ECCDC, focusing on our home childcare providers. The term that we use here in Ontario is home childcare providers, for those of you who may be joining us from Alberta or other parts of Canada. And those sessions that you were facilitating, you were kind of linking it to Ontario's How Does Learning Happen? Ontario's Pedagogy for the Early Years. So I'm curious around your thoughts around what makes home childcare unique to other early learning and childcare provisions.
This has been my own learning journey that I've come to learn more and more about home childcare and what that entails, what that looks like. And honestly, in where I am currently in my journey, I would almost say these are almost the ideal environments for children for learning. So they're small groups, they're mixed age groups. And so it really ties in with being culturally responsive and relevant pedagogy. It's not overstimulating. And we know the home environment is one of the primary learning environments for young children. And so I really think that home childcare providers can provide an amazing experience for young children because we get to see them not just for 10 months or a year, but we grow with them throughout their time. That we have that consistency of a educator, of a caring, nurturing adult with them for years, so we can really customize and be responsive in our practices to meet the needs of the child and make sure that we are honoring their pathway of learning, their growth, their development, where sometimes this is easier to miss or overlook when you're in large facilities. One of my second year being an educator in Canada, I had 24 toddlers in my environment. I don't call them classrooms anymore. It's part of my process of decolonizing and de-institutionalizing the early learning year. So my play environment, 24 toddlers, that's a lot. That's overstimulating for anyone. I just recently did an interview with CBC Radio, and the radio host afterwards, like, are you serious? 24 toddlers? Yes. And it's not uncommon. And it does help a little bit when you go from a home environment to a larger scale learning environment into the school systems. But really, that's not our goal as early childhood educators, to get them ready for this myth of school readiness and kindergarten readiness. It's really to meet them where they are now. And I find that day home educators can really provide this rich, responsive environment that maybe other environments, they might struggle to meet that just because of the systems and the programs and the policies. So I really see this unique opportunity for our home educators to raise their voice because often we know our day, our home childcare providers have been overlooked. They're the ones that are often seen as babysitters because they're not in a professional, quotation marks here, a professional location went in research and what we know about child growth and development, this is actually a wonderful environment for children. So by bringing in professionalism as a home childcare provider, we can really advocate for ourselves and advocate that this is actually a really important environment for children to grow. So hats off to all our home childcare providers, because you are alone when you're by your home in your own home. But you might work alone, but you're not alone. There's so many other educators who have similar experiences. There's communities of practice, there's organizations that support you. So you might work alone in your home, but you're not alone in your practices. And so this is a great opportunity for home childcare educators and providers to just say, you know what? Yeah, we do matter. We have value. And many children will flourish in our care versus other environments. So let's own that. Let's be proud of that.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of resonating with what you were saying, but maybe they're often forgotten or maybe overlooked, but the important role that they play in our ecosystem when we're thinking about early learning and childcare. And yeah, not all children, a center-based program doesn't really fit them, meet their kind of needs. And the it's often when you're in a program, you're constrained to that schedule, what others are doing, whereas in home childcare, you have that more flexibility to change things up and go with the children. And you spoke to the mixed age groups, and I remember I'm a child growing up in the 70s, so a little while ago, and we played in mixed age groups. When we played out in When we played out in the streets in the community, there were children younger than me, there were children older than me, and I think that's been lost
Yeah,
quite a
absolutely.
lot
Yeah.
in childhood at the moment. So yeah, that mix, often those children that go to home childcare when they're preschool and then after school they're coming back as well. So that consistency. And I'm totally with you. Classroom isn't a term that I gravitate to. In the UK, we tend not to say classrooms. So yeah, that those connotations of classroom, whereas I think my preferred is, playrooms, but yeah, not that classroom.
I like my play spaces or play environments.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
the play worker and the play at East in us.
Yeah, and I think the language that we use conveys a message too, and often we use language without thinking about what maybe those connotations are, and you spoke to decolonizing. So,
Yeah.
yeah. Okay, thank you for that. So, you spoke really eloquently to the difference and the uniqueness of home childcare. I'm just wondering if there are any challenges, any particular challenges that you feel home childcare providers face, and any strategies that you have to overcome those challenges.
Well, aside from they need to do everything by themselves. They need to cook, they need to clean, they need to set the schedules. They're doing everything. So time management is something that I think many home childcare providers struggle with. And especially when you're at home working from home all day, and then the children go home, and then you're still at home. You always feel like you're working. I know I have a home office here, and the first thing I want to do when my husband comes home is I want to get out. And the last thing he wants to do is go out because he's been out all day. So I think home childcare providers also struggle with self-care and making sure they're being mindful of that separation and taking time for them. And even if it means physically changing the layout of their environment. So it's that visual shift in mindset and giving themselves time that we're not always going to get it right. Just like any other profession out there, we're not looking for perfection in childcare. We're looking for excellence in childcare. And so recognizing that you have so many hats you're playing at the same time, all the time, for typically longer hours than what educators do in center-based programs, that it's going to feel overwhelming sometimes. And so making sure that you take care of yourself. And one of my favorite practices for self-care is actually creating a self-care jar where you have slips of paper inside this jar of everything you love doing. from drinking a glass of water to rehydrate to cleaning. I know sometimes cleaning is very therapeutic, going for a walk, hugging a tree, and making sure it's not just Eurocentric self-care practices that we know doesn't work for everyone. So not getting a mani and pedi and massage, which we all know is ridiculously expensive nowadays, but spending time with your own family. Right. Watching a movie with your friends that just make you laugh right from the gut. Enjoying and indulging in a little chocolate cake every so often. But you put all these self-care strategies on strips of paper, and then you fold them up and put them in your self-care jar. And when you're having a really off day and you just need some uplift and you need to recharge your battery and find your energy again, then you take one of those slips out. And if it's something you want to do, then you say, yes, I'm going to do this. If it's not, you throw it to the side and you pick another one. So you're always going to have ideas on how to take care of yourself, whether it's for 30 seconds or maybe you're like, I'm going to take a weekend getaway. I'm going to turn off my phone for 48 hours. That might be hard for many of us, but I'm telling you from personal experience, it is very, very soothing when we can actually unplug for a little bit. So I think that's one of the big ones is the self-care. I also find that a lot of home childcare providers struggle with planning for mixed age groups. I always get questions about how do I plan activities? And in the lovely words of our lovely Diane Cashin, activities are always outcome oriented. They are very adult directed. So maybe it means reframing how we plan our environment and not on activities or themes, but really using the emergent curriculum approach and using child-led pedagogical approaches and saying, okay, what materials can I add to this space? How might I need to change my routine? Because when we add loose parts, materials, when we stop looking at outcome-based activities and looking for process-based experiences for children, then doesn't matter what age they are, they're going to interact with those materials in a way that works for them. So even if you're bringing in, say, you have a little one who is just starting to stand up and using that couch to balance, and another child is going to be climbing all over that couch, and that's probably your 2-year-old who is climbing everywhere, whereas maybe your preschoolers are putting a blanket on the end and making a little fort and a little micro environment to hide away and giggle and laugh, whereas your older children are going to be using that couch for something to relax on and read a book and hold on to the infant who's holding on to the edge and letting the toddler climb over them and just handing the preschoolers a flashlight underneath. So something as simple as a couch and just putting on your planning, a couch. Let's see how diverse children interact with that. And then it's up to us to observe and document the learning they're showing us. So putting away and reframing our mindset of what this teaching should look like and how we should plan. And this is, I've done this switch myself. I absolutely had worksheets for my 2-year-olds my second year of being an educator, thinking, oh, this is amazing. I was so proud of myself. And now I'm like, it was horrible practice. Like, really, Tina, come on. What was I thinking? But it was the only thing I knew. Everyone around me was doing it. So I thought that's what I had to do. And so, reframing our own mindset of what learning actually looks like and what is teaching. That's why I don't like calling myself a teacher. I'm an early childhood educator. It's a different role. And so, starting to see that more holistic, emergent, and coming forth of interests of children that don't exclude children from the play experiences, from their interactions and environment. And really start looking at creating those invitations to play and provocations and looking at children's learning a little bit differently. I think that really helps us with planning the environment instead of planning activities. And we all know as educators, especially when we have our youngest learners, creating something based on a theme for infants is so difficult when everything has to matchy match. We run out of ideas. And we can make our role as an educator so much easier and so much more meaningful and relevant if we reframe our mindset of what this learning actually looks like. And that's why I love how Ontario, it's how does learning happen? Not just what are they learning, Wow, it really focuses on that process. And that means we're going to be battling. It's an uphill battle because our communities, our society is still very much about academic outcomes as the most important thing. Whereas we know that's not the optimal way for children to learn.
And that how does learning happen is a question mark for a reason. Like, how does it happen? And reflecting on that process, I love that image as you were speaking through of the children playing on the couch, the different ages kind of takes me back to, my childhood as well. And very, very pertinent when we're thinking about working with mixed age groups.
And we can unpack that, right? When we observe and notice what the children are doing, how they're interacting, how they're socializing, how they're playing on their own, then we can unpack it ourselves and say, I wonder if this is what their brain is telling them to explore right now. And I wonder if this is what they're doing and this is what they're learning. So when families come and ask us, what did my child do today? Say, well, today they were engaging with the couch and this is what they were doing. And this is what they learned through this play process, through their play explorations. Their language skills were just phenomenal as they were coming up with new words, right? They were developing those core muscle strengths. And did you know that's a precursor to emergent writing? Because if they don't have strong cores, they can't use their fingers. And so explaining that the families and connecting how learning is playing. They're not didactic, it's not a didactic system that we have here. They're interwoven together. And but having that confidence within ourselves to change our mindset and be able to explain what's happening to those that might not struggle what play really is.
That confidence is so important to be able to speak to those pieces. So we are coming to the end of our time together.
Already?
Time is
Wow.
ab It is. Time is flying by. So if someone is thinking about becoming a home childcare provider, where could they find information? Is there any training that you would suggest that they looked at?
So go to your local provincial organizations. The CCCF does have, it's relatively newer on the framework. They do have some professional learning experiences resource. I know they have social media as well, specifically for home childcare providers. I know I'm on that social network. I'm pretty sure the ECCDC, I know we do sessions to support educators because it is a unique environment. It is a unique approach. I do know in Alberta, for those, just because it's located in Alberta doesn't mean it doesn't have national recognition and importance for all family, what we call in Alberta family day home educators, ADSN. And they specifically, she's actually a day home educator who noticed there was a lack of support and resources for home childcare providers. And so she created this beautiful organization that is specifically meant for home childcare providers. So even if you're in Ontario, if you're in BC, if you're in Nunavut, you can access their resources. And it's one of my go-to places to really see what's happening. Even research-based, there's not a lot of research. I know here in Alberta, we have Laura Woodman. She's doing specific rate research on home childcare environments and practices. And there's an individual in the States who is also doing specific research on that. But honestly, that's what I know of. Because, like we mentioned before, it's been an ignored part of our sector. And we're starting to see more and more supports and more research being done. And we need the research to support our practices. And the research needs the practices to support the research. It's a symbiotic relationship that we have. One's not more important than the other, but it gives value and meaning to what we do as home childcare providers. So I would say those are my two go-tos organizations for, okay, how can we support a very unique niche environment sector and sorry, not a sector, component of our sector.
Some great resources there. And again, if you could p share those links with me, I'll pop those in the show notes for
Absolutely, I
our
will.
listeners. So, I'm interested in the research that's going on. I have to look out Laura Woodman. So, As we wrap up our conversation, Tina, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, I always invite educators to join other organizations, and I'll do a little shout out for the nonprofit that I'm president of because it is on play advocacy. And to join us, we do every so often, we'll do sessions and play events specifically based on play practices. So come and join us over there at aacpcn.org. And really, my biggest thing is connect with community, everyone. You're not alone. You're not alone. There's so many of us who are in similar situations. Really become part of a community of what I call a community of inspiration. The common name is community of practice, but I feel those communities are all about inspiration. So join one of those and be a voice for yourself. Really be a voice for yourself. You deserve it and you need it.
Right, lovely. Yeah, home childcare can be, or if you work by yourself, it can be isolating. So yeah, get out there, make those connections. And I love how you phrase communities of practice to communities of inspiration, which I know they really can be that inspiration.
Yeah.
So Tina, thank you so much for sharing your time with me and our listeners today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you this afternoon. I could continue chatting for hours with you. A lot of what you're saying really resonates with me. So thank you for your work that you do with the home childcare providers. Thank you for this conversation around your passions and the home childcare providers community.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. This has been a pleasure, and I can't believe our time is up. That's insane. Thank you so much. I can't wait to chat again soon with you and see what else the ECCDC has in store for educators. I love seeing what organizations do to support educators. It's always heartwarming. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Yes, we sure do have different sessions, webinars, resources, and we'll pop that link in the show notes as well, our esteem and so on. Thank you. So that wraps up our conversation. It was an absolute pleasure reconnecting with Tina to discuss play, how does learning happen, and home-based childcare. Tina shared great insights during our conversation and many useful resources, which you'll find in the show notes. What struck me about my conversation with Tina was her passion for play and children being at the center of everything we do, as well as what a brilliant cheerleader she is for home-based childcare. Thank you, Tina, for a wonderful conversation and for all of you for tuning into this episode of the ECCDC podcast. If you liked this podcast, please leave a comment below. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe. Until next time, stay safe.